Hey listeners, Chloe here. If you need to stay as up to date with the latest developments and innovations in the luxury industry as I do, you need to dive into Vogue Business. It's your ticket to a global perspective on fashion and beauty, delivering exclusive insights that will give you the edge in this competitive, dynamic industry. Just visit VogueBusiness.com today and use the code RUN20 at checkout to join the Vogue Business community. That's VogueBusiness.com, promo code RUN20. Don't miss out. This is The Run-Through. I'm Chloe Mel.
And I'm Cho Minardi. And I'm struggling to find where we are on the script. I'm midway down. Is there a top bar?
Is it the thing that says script on the top?
Oh dear, I'm in headlines.
Coming up on today's show, we have Elle Fanning of The Great and also Who Is Great. And the photographer behind the most recent Vogue cover, which just dropped, featuring the one and only Margot Robbie, Barbie herself. He's going to give us the inside scoop on what it's like shooting a cover for Vogue magazine.
But as always, we have to start with our fashion and culture news. And we're lucky enough to have someone who's joining us in the studio today. Sarah, do you want to introduce yourself?
Sure. My name is Sarah Spellings. I'm fashion news editor for Vogue.com.
So, big week for fashion news.
Yes, very. The Cannes Film Festival is going, one of the biggest red carpets of the year, if not the biggest.
It does feel like it, right? It feels like it's eclipsed the Oscars with excitement and people play more. I don't know what, I guess there's just less pressure. What have been some of the highlights so far?
So far, I loved Naomi Campbell in feathered pink Valentino. It was just really pretty. I mean, Jennifer Lawrence looked really stunning in this very classic lipstick red Dior ball gown with a stole. It was so old Hollywood, but she wore it with flip-flops.
Yeah, can we talk about the shoe
debacle?
Yeah.
Always a thing at Cannes. So Cannes used to have, and I don't think it was ever official, but it was a enforced unofficial rule that you had to wear stilettos if you're a woman walking the red carpet.
It's so crazy.
It's so archaic.
Yeah, it's so archaic. And of course, people started to, you know, defy it. Kristen Stewart famously took off her heels when she was a jury member, so it was a big deal, and she walked the red carpet barefoot. Julia Roberts also walked the red carpet barefoot, I think, in 2016. And there have been reports over the years of people getting turned away from events because they're not wearing high heels. And so it is kind of a big deal. But this year you see a lot of people, you know, wearing flat shoes or non-shoe shoes or barefoot.
I know. Isabelle Huppert wore some very interesting non-shoe shoes. Can you elaborate?
Yeah. What does that mean?
So non-shoe shoes are like, they're sometimes like barely their shoes, like the mesh shoes at the Row, but sometimes they're shoes that look like you're not wearing any shoes at all. And so Isabelle Huppert, she was actually wearing heels, but they were molded, flesh-toned heels that kind of looked like hooves almost.
Oh, yeah,
like
terrible.
Five toes.
They were a little terrifying for me.
Yeah, but a little freaky.
Yeah.
I like a surprise hoof or a flip-flop with a ball gown. Keeps things interesting.
Why did Cate Blanchett not wear shoes?
Oh, so she went barefoot while she was presenting an award to an Iranian female filmmaker. And it was a statement on women's rights and women's freedom.
I mean, she's the first person to go barefoot this year. There's no other barefoot.
It's
no
just
other barefoot
year.
Warriors.
Barefoot Contessa.
But the barefoot trend, as I discovered, is a big thing. Like, men are doing it. Jacob Elordi in LA just casually going out with his buddies was photographed walking around barefoot in LA.
Shawn Mendes.
Yeah.
They're just not wearing shoes?
They're not wearing shoes.
Is this, I mean, there was a whole running trend of running
grounding.
Barefoot.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Also, isn't the thing called grounding where it's
But that's about,
recent.
Isn't that about, like, grass?
Yeah.
This is like you're walking on the sidewalks of Los Angeles. What if there's a shattered beer bottle? I don't understand.
That'd be my concern
as
well.
I think it's a terrible idea. In a nutshell. Mm-hmm. It's a terrible idea.
But it's a trend.
It's a trend. It's a trend. But completely unrelated to the red carpet trend of Cannes, but also happening. This is when Cannes and Barefoot Boy Summer collide. It hasn't been the biggest scandal of the week, has it? I mean, we have the smoking scandal.
Oh, yes. I think this is a scandal specifically within the vintage lovers community. But
it's a micro-scandal.
Dorm in a teacup is what the British kids say.
Which is the best kind of scandal. That's my favorite. Lily Rose Depp attended the Idol premiere wearing a fall 1994 Chanel dress. That was the original at Cannes. And she looked amazing. And there is a video of her walking out of her hotel looking, you know, as chic as can be. And she's like smoking a long cigarette. And there's a prominent vintage dealer, Shrimpton Couture, who posted on Instagram saying that she thought it was never a good idea to smoke in something so precious and an archival vintage and such a, you know, a dress that Christy Turlington wore. It was kind of disrespectful to be smoking a cigarette beforehand.
Because what, the smoke can break down the garment, or it just makes it smell?
It hangs on the garment. And my understanding is that it's hard to clean. A lot of times when you're buying vintage online, a reputable dealer will say, in a smoke-free, pet-free household, or, you know, something to those lines to ensure the buyer that the garment is still in good condition and, I guess, mostly free of smell. But I think this kind of goes into a larger conversation people are starting to have now that we see so many celebrities
it
wearing
these. It goes back
these,
to Kim, doesn't it?
Ugh, it always goes back to that goddamn dress.
It all goes back to Kim. I think it was very interesting that she wore it. And I think now we see so many celebrities wearing these holy grail vintage pieces. And so it makes sense that we're also having the conversation around what responsibility do you have to the dress if you're going to wear it.
So now that brings up, because a lot of people are wearing vintage in an effort to be more eco-friendly and eco-conscious. But now we're worried about the state of the garment, it like the Maryland dress, or now the smoky.
The state of the garment? What about the people?
Choma's highly skeptical.
Fair point.
So now people are recreating vintage looks to wear on the red carpet?
Yeah. Natalie Portman wore a recreation of the Dior Junon dress.
Gorgeous, gorgeous dress.
Absolutely stunning.
Strapless white tulle with sort of navy paillette encrusted scallops.
Yeah, yeah. And it's from, I think, 1949. And she wore a total recreation of it on the red carpet.
By Dior.
Yeah, by Dior, which, sorry to bring up Kim again, but I do think it is a direct, you know, backlash to that Marilyn moment, is wearing something from a kind of similar-ish time period.
Yeah.
But just doing the full recreation. Because the original is in the Met, I think.
Okay. Well, it's kind of like couture, where one of the perks of couture is that it's almost like an NFT, like you are buying this individual artistic output and it's not able to be recreated. And in a way, a vintage garment kind of feels like that. It's like there is now this one piece.
I don't know. I mean, I think it does follow in this trend for nostalgia, and we are seeing so many brands, Jean Paul Gaultier included, reissuing certain collections. Like I own some pretty sought after Jean Paul Gaultier pieces that have been recreated.
Does that annoy you?
Yeah, it does annoy me because it devalues the one that I have. I mean, I guess there's still maybe really good vintage dealers know the difference between the new. I have two pieces that have been reissued.
I always like to see a bit of sustainability on the red carpet as much as it can be. And so I think that's one thing that was so cool about the shift to vintage.
But you liked Natalie Portman, which was a recreation.
Yes. I think she looked amazing. I think that particular design, it is much better for that dress to stay in the museum.
Okay. So it's a fine
Maybe
line
it's a special
here.
Occasion moment. I just don't think you need to be doing it with every celebrity.
Yeah. Right.
I think one thing for me that's satisfying about seeing vintage is this idea about enduring power of design and that these things really can last, and that's something that is maybe missing from our current fashion moment is the sense that things won't last. And so I get much more satisfaction out of Nicole Kidman wearing the actual 2005 dress and seeing how beautiful it is and how beautiful she is than necessarily a recreation, even though I think Natalie Portman looked amazing.
Right. Just it's definitely more special. And it's a full circle moment because she actually wore that dress and it was hers.
Mm-hmm. Right. The Little Mermaid comes out this weekend.
Yeah. And, you know, Sarah has been doing some interesting reporting around what we're calling method dressing.
What is method dressing?
So Halle Bailey is the Little Mermaid and she has basically done her entire press tour with her character in mind. So she's taken to the red carpet in looks that are inspired by her character.
It sounds not
like
good.
Ever since the Oscars, she came to the Oscars in a kind of teal, like beautiful blue, full skirted gown that you couldn't look at it and not think Disney princess. Yeah. And I just started noticing that so many celebrities were dressing in character for their press tours.
Oh, like, wow. Like who else?
Ryan Gosling and Margot Robbie at Comic-Con came kind of in Barbie and Ken attire. Ryan wore that shirt that said Greta Gerwig in the Barbie font.
Mm-hmm.
Jenna Ortega also, I think her personal style is so inextricably linked with Wednesday. And now she's starring in Beetlejuice. And it's so scream queen-y. It just creates this weird little, like, Ouroboros of, you know, you have Margot Robbie dressing as Barbie, and then you have Barbiecore, and then you have the trend reports of Barbiecore, and then you have the actual movie, and it just, like, sometimes feels like a snake eating its own tail a little bit.
Definitely. I am excited for the movie. I'm excited for Little Mermaid. I'm actually going to go watch it.
Mm. You are?
Yeah. Fun. I just need a child to take with me.
You don't need a child to take with you. You're a strong, independent woman.
I feel like there's going to be adults in there.
I mean, me and my boyfriend were debating about this. We were like, we both secretly want to go see it. And we're like, whose child can we borrow to go see it?
We like rent a kid.
No, we'll go see it. We'll go see it. I think it'll be great.
I like that poor Melissa McCarthy was getting a lot of shade.
She
about her Ursula makeup. All the drag queens were very upset.
Oh my God.
They said that this really could have been handled better. And it's true that when you look at the pictures, it's like the eyebrows are completely uneven. And it just feels like she could have learned a thing or two from Drag Race.
Oh, Disney Melissa. Fail. Oh my God.
I know. All right, ladies, thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you so much for joining us, Sarah.
Yeah, thank you for having me. It's been so much fun.
The Run Through will be back in just a moment. Hi everyone, it's Chloe, and I'm so excited to share something fabulous with you, Vogue's first ever global fashion community, Vogue Club. Our members get to mingle with Vogue editors, yes, including me, and fellow fashion enthusiasts at exclusive events around the world. And that's just the start. Membership opens doors to the fashion industry, bringing you expert career advice and insider style and beauty tips. What are you waiting for? Head over to Vogue.com/membership to join, and here's a little treat. Use code TRT20 and snag 20% off your membership. That's TRT20 for 20% off your ticket to Vogue Club. Are you in?
Welcome back to the Run Through of Vogue.
This week's big news in the office at Vogue is the Barbie Vogue cover is finally out.
I mean, whew, that was a hard secret to keep, girl.
We've been sitting on this for a while.
Yeah, I feel like relieved.
It is, of course, Margot Robbie, and it's amazing.
I mean, it is just everything you want from a Barbie cover. It is Margot Robbie looking amazing in a pink Versace look. And, of course, we had to invite Ethan James Green, who shot that marvelous cover, to come to the studio to learn a little bit more about what it's like to shoot a cover of that magnitude.
And this is a pretty eccentric and fun shoot, and so I think a lot went into it. So it was really fun to hear about the behind the scenes of how that happens, from the set design to run-throughs with Anna to feedback between the whole creative team. And they really beautifully transformed Ms. Robbie into a variety of different Barbies.
We are so obsessed with your latest cover story.
It's so fun.
Yeah.
Can you describe it for people who can't see it as they're listening?
Well, the cover is very pink. with Margot Robbie, and it's all about Barbie, and it was an incredible shoot. And Gab styled it, and then...
Gabriella Carifa Johnson.
Yeah. And then our good friend Julia Wagner, who does set but also is very creative, came up with the concept for each picture.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and it was so great. Margot was just, like, down to do the best pictures. She wanted to do the best Barbie shoot ever.
What's she like? Was that your first time meeting her?
First time meeting her, she was really easy and very professional. And, yeah, just wanted each picture to be the best it could be.
It's quite high concept, so I can imagine it was quite a long day.
Well, we shot every single look that we were hoping to.
Oh, wow.
Which usually you're trimming off, like, two or three.
Right.
So how many did that end up being?
We did a cover try.
Can you tell people what a cover try means?
So cover try, when you do a shoot for Vogue especially, usually there'll be two looks that you guys are hoping to be on the cover. So you have to approach those two pictures as cover pictures, which is totally different than doing a picture inside a story.
It's a lot of pressure, huh?
It can be.
How does that picture, just for people listening, how does that picture look different from an inside picture?
Well, you have to think about, like, the logo. It has to be simplified a little bit because you have all of the text. You also want to try and sum it all up. And for this, like, having the sets and having different characters that she was playing, it wasn't about doing one of those characters. It was more about capturing her and having that image be the Margot moment.
And what did you say when you heard that it was Barbie, Margot? This was kind of outside of your wheelhouse a bit, or not so much?
I mean, maybe a little bit.
How dare you, Choma?
No!
Maybe a little bit.
Ethan has no wheelhouse.
No, I like it when people get outside of their, I don't know, comfort zone.
I think there was an opportunity to go high concept with it.
Right.
And that I really get into. And also, Barbie is just such an iconic character. Like, everybody knows who Barbie is. So to be able to play in that world, you don't get that opportunity all the time.
How did the concept evolve? Like, so you get the idea, and you guys were like, okay, this is an opportunity to do something wild and fun and interesting and highly conceptual. But then what's the next step? How do you decide what that concept is and what it's going to look like?
Well, I was asked to do it, and then we had a Zoom call with the Vogue team, and I had to present an idea. And for me, when I was just starting to look through Barbie, I was really excited by the old Barbie ads. And I thought about being a kid in the 90s and seeing ads on TV all the time.
Do you remember that when you were a kid?
Oh, my God, yeah. And then, like, thinking about it now, they're, like, psychotic. Like, it's like, you know.
Describe,
like,
one, because I haven't seen those.
It's just, like, it starts with, like, a song, and it's like, this Barbie, blah, blah, blah. And then the kids start, like, screaming things, like, oh, she can go underwater, or, like, you know, like, her hair changes color. And then the way that each Barbie is sold to you, it's sold to you as the best Barbie ever.
Right.
Even though, like, they're going to keep rolling them out, you know, like, and every single time it's the Barbie you have to have.
Were you interested in Barbie?
See, I definitely was interested in Barbie, but, like, for me, it wasn't possible in that moment in time.
So you knew it was off the table, so it wasn't like you were even lusting after a Barbie as a kid. You just were sort of remember these ads playing.
Yeah.
And you dove back in to the ad.
Yeah, revisited. And then I was looking at vintage pictures of Barbie ads, or vintage ads of Barbie. And that's when we did the first meeting. I was like, I've been looking at these vintage Barbie ads, like the compositions. And then everyone seemed to be into it. And then Julia started working in on it. And then Julia has this thing. I always say Julia's right, like, 99.9% of the time.
Set designer.
Julia Wagner. So she's set designer, but she works closely with a lot of photographers on the creative. Like, she has,
She's kind of like a...
Yeah, she's super clever, super smart. And so she kind of was sitting with that, and we were talking, and then she kind of came back with the creative deck, and it just was so much better than what I was thinking. So, yeah. And so it's great, too, because she does the creative, so she knows what's possible with the set. And for something like this, when you're doing, like, constant set changes, you need someone to know how that works and what's possible.
I love the playing with this idea of scale. Like, it was just, as you went through, I'm trying to imagine how, when you arrive on set, what you see, because you can't really get a sense of how you would create this in one day.
Yeah. Well, the most complicated one, when you look at the picture, you wouldn't be able to tell, but it's... Right.
What is the most complicated one?
Margot for president.
Really?
Because if you look, there's these pins that she's wearing, and on the pre-light at the very end...
What's a pre-light?
So a pre-light is what you do before a shoot, and you don't always get to do it when you have it. It's a luxury.
Okay.
And it sets you up to just, like, focus on the shoot instead of, like, trying to figure out if you're doing the right light or not.
So it's, like, the day before?
The day before, yeah.
Okay.
And then at the end, because we were set up with the lights, Margot wanted to do a picture, and Barbie for... president, or Margot for president, we had her wearing these pins with herself on them saying, like, vote for me, Margot for president.
This makes me laugh because Ethan and I worked on one shoot together, which was Elizabeth Warren when she was running for president.
Wow,
so
completely different beat.
Yeah.
Different wannabe president.
Yeah.
But also,
different
wannabe presidential campaign of a strong woman. And you know what? I'm going to embrace that. Ethan, a podcast is hard, especially for Vogue, because it's not visual. We are all thinking about the shoot, and hopefully people are looking it up when they're listening to this. But can you describe, like, the scale? It's like an enormous Margot next to a ruler that makes her look tiny versus what are some of the other examples of how you sort of showed that scale? And was it all manipulated with props, or was some done afterwards?
It was all done. There's only one picture that it wasn't the actual size.
Okay.
We had like a 6-foot pencil.
Wow.
We had like fun.
Huge, like,
did you keep the pencil?
Pins. No. We had huge pins.
Yeah, when Working Girl Barbie might be my fave.
Yeah, no,
so
that,
good.
That one's pretty good. It's pretty good. And it's like that whole desk was, it was just, Julia's team made these like boxes and then covered them with seamless paper, which you would never know. And I think it's cool that we had a lot of the physical sets because of like everything happening with AI. And we have BTS videos that are being published with the story. So you'll be able to actually see the sets in their raw form.
Because people, I imagine, will look at that and think it's, like, generated.
Yeah,
but
I think
love
people
that
just assume,
like,
yeah.
Wow. That's awesome.
There's only one thing that is not actual size, and it's a large flower pot.
Ah. Huh.
That she's roller skating in front of.
Okay. You know, I feel like we didn't get the sort of step-by-step. So you get the shoot assignment for a Vogue cover, and then you start working on a Zoom call or a meeting with everyone about what it's going to look like. Are you making a mood board? Are you involved in picking the clothes? Are you choosing the locations? Like, what is your process like for that?
For me, with clothes, I can like flag if something isn't like amazing, but like at Vogue, it's kind of like what has to be done has to be done. And when you go into Vogue, you have to accept that. But I do really love fashion, and rarely I'll be like, this is god awful.
Right.
And I think especially if someone has their personal style, then that's like amazing. But with clothes, I feel like being in fashion for so long and it not being my job to be like, oh, we need this with this with this, it's almost better for me to be just, like, surprised in the moment. But I love the clothes, and I love how they can transform and create characters, and I'm all about it. I'm just, I can't get that deep. I have to,
so
like,
you're not going to be mad when they say, we need to get the shoe.
No. Like, I,
because
like,
some photographers are like, ugh.
No, I love a foot. I love a shoe.
Oh, well, let's talk about Barbie's foot.
Oh, my God.
I know
God,
the Barbie
yeah.
foot in the story. Yeah. So in the story where she's next to this life-size ruler, you see her little feet in the sort of like the Barbie feet where they're on permanent
And
heels.
When it came out in the trailer, foot fetishes unite.
Well, I was
really
so
excited.
Glad we got the foot like that because I saw on Twitter like everyone was like freaking about the feet. I was like, thank God.
I know.
Yeah, it would have been incomplete.
You really would have missed an opportunity to be disseminated against the dark web.
Oh, my God.
How closely do you and Anna work together? And what has that – were you nervous the first time?
I mean, she's much more involved, I would say, than most editors that I work with.
Yeah.
Like,
I can see that.
Everything – that it's very much considered – and for me in the beginning, it was like very like, you know, I mean, I'm like Devil Wears Prada generation, you know? Like, to be like working with her and like, I don't know, that's like a crazy dream come true. So it took a second to like, you know, but I think she's incredible and so considered in a way that I think a lot of editors are not.
And you're very close with Hari Neff, right? And she's in it.
Yeah, no, which is so crazy because Hari and I started together. Like, I think she was one of the first people that I asked to take a picture of.
Oh.
Because I used to be so shy. And so to see her in this film and, like, playing, like, a proper role, and it's like if someone would have told us that these things would be happening, it would be like, oh, my God. Like,
yeah.
We saw it
someone
for
told
ourselves,
you,
but, like, I don't know.
In a decade, you guys will both be working on Barbie.
Barbie.
No, which is so, like, it's like, you just wouldn't have thought that film.
No.
But it's so cool.
Yeah, I love that. I love that. I mean, you worked for a while with the legendary David Armstrong. Maybe you can describe it better.
I mean, so David was an incredible photographer, and he worked a bit in fashion.
How did you meet?
I met him because he had asked to photograph me for his book, which is a bunch of portraits of male models in his home that he had in Bed-Stuy. And so he took my picture when I was 18, just arrived to New York, first major photographer I ever worked with. And when I was working with him, I told him, oh, I'm here in New York. I'm modeling because I want to be a photographer.
Oh, so you knew?
Yeah, yeah. No, okay. I knew at a very young age that what I wanted to do. I was like 14.
Okay. Wow. What was the, do you remember, like, was there one fashion photograph you looked at and you were like, I want to do that?
It's funny. It, like, really, I remember when I was, I don't know, maybe I would have been 4. I remember seeing, like, a Revlon ad.
Oh, interesting.
I don't know if it was Revlon or what it was, but they used the I'm Too Sexy For My song. And I remember it was like a Linda Evangelista type with like this like blonde, like short haircut. And there was like a telephone booth. And I just saw it and it, I don't know, there was something like
like on a billboard in a magazine.
It was like calling me. Like it was like this.
Wow.
I just like felt, I don't know. I was so young, but it just like, it was like, I don't know, the gravity in that moment was crazy. So I wasn't exposed to proper fashion photography until I was probably 16. But going back to David, he had photographed me during that time of us working together, or that first time I told him that I wanted to be a photographer. And then he right away told me to use his space to take pictures.
Oh,
without him seeing
lovely.
Any of my work ever, he just right away offered that. And I didn't have anything to show him at the time that I felt like confident to show him. So for a while, he kept shooting me. I kept going there. I would go and hang out at the house. And then finally, I was offered to do an online editorial for V-Man when I was, I don't know, I would have been maybe 20 or 21. And so I reached out to him. I was like, oh, I finally have a story. And he's like, oh, come to the house, use the house. I photographed my friend Charlie. And I was editing the first picture. He hadn't seen any of my pictures up until this moment. And I was sitting in his parlor. And he walked in. And he was like, Ethan Dahl. He's like, that's fucking divine.
Aww.
And then he just like, that gave me this like energy to just like, I don't know, it gave me so much confidence. Mm. He really was the first person who saw it for me.
And what a person to see it for you.
And were you still modeling then as you were starting to photograph? Or?
Yeah, I had a real like fade in, fade out moment.
Is there anything you miss from modeling?
You're like,
nah.
Ethan's face like now says no. I don't
know. I mean, like for me, like, I am so grateful for it, and I was so lucky to be able to have that. It really gave me an eye into things that most photographers do not get to see. Because
like
I
in
saw,
what way?
Well, I saw, like, every type of photographer work and how they communicate with a model. And, you know, I've worked with the very, like, worst, and I've worked with Steven Meisel. You know, I've worked with everyone.
Oh, who are your favorite? I mean, you've obviously shot some really amazing people, and you started out by shooting your friends. And who do you enjoy shooting now? Is there someone you'd still love to, someone
who's
on your bucket list?
Yeah,
who's the dream person?
I would really like to work with Jim Carrey.
What?
I would love to work with Jim Carrey.
Oh my God. That was a complete surprise.
Yeah. Like, I love Jim Carrey.
I mean, an amazing actor.
Yeah. What is Jim Carrey up to? Good question.
I'm sure he'd love to have his picture taken by you.
I mean, but I'm like, yeah. No, I love Jim Carrey.
Did you grow up watching Jim Carrey movies?
Oh my God, yeah.
What was your number one?
I feel like Liar, Liar.
Yeah.
Maybe.
I need to go back to them.
And then, like, I mean, The Grinch.
Yeah.
That is, like, one of the best performances ever. Like, that is insane. You know, like, that movie's going to stick around a long time.
Like,
it's amazing.
If you can name, like, who are the top three people you've shot that were the most exciting to you?
I think Rihanna.
Oh, yeah.
That was my first Vogue cover ever.
And she comes in. You got to be ready to problem solve there. You got to be ready.
Yeah. And then Phoebe Waller-Bridge, I shot, like, less than a month after.
Right.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
You still shoot in black and white a lot, yeah?
Honestly, I mean, with fashion, it's, like, very much, like, probably more color now. But
well, I mean,
if I'm doing it for myself,
never seen more color than this Barbie
that's
shoot.
That's why I was like, it's so far from black and white.
I know.
If I'm doing it for myself, usually I like a little black and white.
How come? What does it bring?
I don't know. I shoot mainly digital.
Okay.
And so with black and white, it's like I know it's going to age good.
Okay.
And a lot of my favorite photographers who are not fashion, it's black and white.
Yeah. Who are your favorite photographers?
I mean, David Armstrong.
Of course.
Steven Meisel.
Yes.
Avedon, yeah. Penn.
Yeah.
Arbus.
I mean, you've worked not just in photos for us, but you work in videos for us. And you did a special project last year? I forgot. I'm mixing up.
Oh, the doc.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
It was a documentary.
Oh, the documentary. Sorry. I thought.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean,
yeah, no, I had been asked by Vogue to do a piece about Don't Say Gay. It was like videos of celebrities talking, but I didn't want to do that. Mm. And I don't know, just even the name Don't Say Gay, like, it's like, I think it's leaving out like a group of people that's going to be hit way harder. You know, like, the whole entire thing is just so ignorant, I think. Mm. So I wanted to go to Texas, and I went with my really good friend, Devin Diaz, who's an incredible writer. And
Devin wrote the story,
right?
Yeah. We did a doc about a little trans girl and her mother and little brother. And in a moment when it's a very scary time to be a trans kid, a trans person, but with this trans kid and like a parent that so clearly loves their child, mm-hmm. that they've gone down this path with them. You know, like, I don't think anyone who's going to go down the path of...
Were they attempting to leave Texas because of the situation?
Well, the hard thing is, like, they knew they had to leave, but it's something that not everyone can afford to do. Mm. And a lot of the affordable options are red states that you're not really going to be...
Right, safe.
Yeah. And so it's like you have this parent that loves her daughter so much who comes from a Christian background. And for me, that was like a really big thing when we chose the family that we worked with, because I grew up like evangelical. And
oh, wow.
To like see a family that was very similar, but a mother who was affirming her trans child, that was so, and maintaining her faith, which mm-hmm. I found so incredible that someone would be able to do both things. Because usually you're, as a queer person, you're kind of like forced to choose. Like you feel like you have to, like, it's one or the other. And this was the first time that I was really seeing the opposite of that. And it was just very eye-opening to something that's happening in the country that, like, you wouldn't know unless you love someone who's really dealing with it.
I can't believe we're in this position in this country. It just seems so...
Yeah. It's ridiculous.
We're so happy you took the time out
to do
this.
Thank you so much for coming.
Yeah, no, it was
congratulations.
So
we love this cover. Our next guest on the pod is an actor and a true fashion icon, mostly because she just loves fashion so much, and that is Elle Fanning. And Choma, you recently got to hang out with Elle.
I did. I was so lucky. She was my seatmate at the Met Gala.
Dream.
And I, you know, she came with this beautiful crown of daisies, and she also had a bouquet, which I tried to pry out of her hands, but she was not having it. But we had a really fun conversation about fashion. I just thought she'd be such a fun guest to have on the show because she really enjoys it.
We spoke to her right before she was off to the Cannes Film Festival, and just as season 3 of The Great premiered. It is a show inspired by the life of Catherine the Great with Elle in the starring role. And she also executive produces the show. So she's wearing quite a few hats and also wearing quite a spectacular Cannes look.
She couldn't say too much because, you know, we recorded the show right before Cannes. So she was pretty tight-lipped about her looks. But then obviously they were just as spectacular as you'd imagine. There was a gorgeous McQueen dress that she wore with a sequin encrusted bodice and this long kind of flowing skirt that was just, you know, lived up to everything you want from Cannes and from Elle, who really embraces the challenge of Cannes with both hands.
Hi, Elle.
Hello, how are you?
We're so excited to see you.
Oh my God, me too. Yay, we're doing it.
Well, I was just watching the trailer of the new season of The Great, and you have some great, great outfits in the trailer. Tell us.
Oh my God, the costumes are just heaven. Are they so much fun or are they sort of a nightmare?
they're a little bit of both. I mean,
yeah.
The workmanship is absolutely amazing. I mean, all the costumes on the show are, you know, handmade and designed, and Sharon Long is our costume designer, who she did season 2 and now season 3, and she's just a genius with fabrics, especially kind of what she comes up with. There's a toile that I wear this year. I think we used it on the poster, but it's a toile that she designed that has elements from like seasons past. Like we have bears and
a
parachute that's in, and people having sex on my toile.
Oh my gosh.
So you should make it into pillowcases. I want that toile.
I think I told her, I think she actually gave me a pillow with it on it, but I want pajamas.
Oh, that's good.
Amazing. A great toile pajama set would be.
Yes. Yeah. We need to sell those.
Lulu should sell those. That would be a really.
I will bring it up. But then, of course, you know, the uncomfortability, which people talk about, you know, the corsets.
Yeah.
Takes getting used to. But I like corsets. So
okay.
We're glad we don't have to wear them anymore, but there is something about that feeling. I'm like, I like it. I'm like tighter.
No, I know what you mean. I had to wear a corset after I had a C-section. It like just keeps you in, you know, it's sort of,
you
feel like.
Your posture's better.
Yeah.
Yeah. The posture thing is real. I got fitted for a corset for the first time for the Met, and it was game changing.
Oh yeah, your dress was sort of a corset.
It did. And the designer, Claire Sullivan, she's very inspired by Vivienne Westwood. And I think, was there a corset under your lace?
There was.
There's always a corset with Vivienne.
It wasn't extremely tight, this one, you know, because it was a looser shape, but there was a corset for sure. No one does it better. My God, best.
Yeah, you've worn some pretty amazing Vivienne Westwood dresses.
Well, everyone dresses.
Yeah, I know.
I feel like it's rare that you're doing the red carpet for as long as you have been doing it and from as young. Do you have any, like, are there any red carpet regrets where you're like, ah, that was really not the right call?
I don't like to regret anything.
That's a great approach.
But, you know, you look back and you're like a teenager having free reign. I think my one regret, I did a fake bang once on a red carpet.
What outfit was that with?
It was actually a Versace. It was a great dress. And looking back on it now, I wanted to go for the like Claudia Schiffer, like, you know, that
yeah, I know
sexy
the look.
Bang look. And I don't have bangs. And I honestly should have just pulled my hair back. Like sometimes you're just like, why didn't I just like slick it back? And like, it would have been cheaper, but.
How do you and your stylist work together? Like, what's the process? Let's say, you know, Cannes is up close upon us. You've been quite a Cannes.
Yes, and I'm going again.
Oh, you're going. Oh, amazing. Yes.
And I have my dress. It's very special.
Oh, can you tell us or not yet?
I'm excited. Well, I'll say it's McQueen.
So you choose this incredible McQueen dress. How do you and Samantha get there?
Well, we, Samantha McMillan, my stylist, we've worked together since I was 13.
Wow.
Oh my gosh.
So she has evolved with me. You know, I tried some people out, but then Samantha just was the complete fit. And she had already been working with my sister as well. So she was, we like to keep things all in the family. Like the people around us, we get very attached to and very close to. And once you're in, you're in. And like you see it all. And that's just the way that it works for me. And Samantha is just, we have such an intimate relationship and we're always texting. And I like looking at the collection. So I send her selects and things that I like, and she tries to get them. But I think she's also really seen my style evolve and evolved with me, because I think for a long time we were trying to make me, you know, have fun with fashion, which, because fashion was always a happy place for me. I felt accepted by the fashion community. Whereas like in school, people wanted, you know, you want to wear skinny jeans and like American Apparel and t-shirts. And I just like, wasn't that girl. And I definitely tried to morph into that for a bit. And then I was like, oh no, that's not me. You know, it was probably so a guy would like me. But it was, Samantha also, you know, growing up, I think we tried to also not make me look too like sexy. Like you can, you know,
of course.
There was something like that balance there that was still maintaining the youthful quality and all of that, that now that I've gotten older, where we get, you know, it opens more doors and you can experiment more, but yeah.
And if you're, I mean, you were the youngest jury member ever at Cannes a few years ago, so you had a lot of red carpet dressing to handle there. What's the secret for that biggest red carpet?
I think that there's so many ways you can go, but I do think you have to be impactful and it has to look good from all angles, which is not always true on every carpet, because it is like the Met, that they're, you know, it's two-sided. So the photographers are behind you and in front of you. So it's like,
and like drones. I feel like you always see overhead.
Totally. Drones. I mean, it is just, it's so massive. It's such a big carpet that you do want an element of drama, and it has to have a 360 good view and like creating those shapes. Like we always think about like angles and shapes, especially in Cannes. I mean, you can go anyway. I always tend to go with the old Hollywood glamour of it all, because it just feels so, it feels like glamorous and kind of that 1950s.
Yeah, that Dior look you wore at Cannes was incredible.
That was one of my favorites. Yeah, Stephen Jones, he designed that hat.
Mm.
What movie are you going to Cannes for?
I'm going actually with L'Oreal Makeup, because they sponsor it. So they invite their ambassadors to come pretty much every
year. Lovely.
Yeah. So if I'm available, I will be there. I always say I thrive in Cannes. Like I'm like, it is good things happen to me there.
I was kind of, I loved hearing that you wore vintage, for one of your several proms, you wore vintage Galliano and you went shopping for it. Do you like vintage shopping in LA? Because there's so many great places. I mean, you're obviously a fashion nerd. How do you keep up with fashion and what's happening?
Well, it used to be style.com, remember, which I was like, just style.com nerd. And I would like have like folders on my computer. Like,
Oh my God.
And I loved like Gemma Ward, and I was like, oh, hey, like, you know, and I knew all the models and I was like, just so obsessed. But yes, now it is definitely Vogue Runway. vintage shopping, I feel like I don't go as much as I used to when I was smaller, but Play Clothes is a big one that's still a staple here in LA that I love.
I've never been. I need to go there.
Galliester is a really good. I remember I was how old? Maybe I have no idea. 11, like 12, probably 12. Me and my best friend went to a Katy Perry concert, and I was like, I have to look amazing for Katy Perry. Like even though she's never going to see me, but I had this like, I was like, I have to like look great. And I went to Galliester because I think I read in a magazine that she went to Galliester. So I was like, okay, I'll go to the store. And I found this amazing orange romper with light blue bows on the shorts. And it had bells inside of the shorts. So when you walked, you jingled. And it was like, it had Katy Perry written all over. And I wore it with huge platform, like orange sandals, but like wooden wedges. And it just, it was one of my best outfits to date, I will say.
Wow. So yeah,
Do you and Dakota ever share clothes?
We used to. I used to steal her clothes all the time when I was younger. But now there's a big height difference. I'm much taller and bigger feet. And so I can't do it anymore.
We loved hearing that or reading that you and Dakota used to reenact scenes from The Devil Wears Prada.
All the time. And she was always Miranda, of course. You know. Bossing me around. And we would put like, you know, Coca-Cola in coffee mugs, make it look like coffee. And we set up all, I mean, we had the full desks. When we would play, it was like taken very seriously. Like we were already, our acting chops were already starting because
God, that's hysterical.
Yeah. I was always the assistant, like running around. I was a little, never get to be the main person with her.
I'm curious to know, what do you like to wear, you know, on your off days, on your, what's the off duty look and what labels are you feeling?
I was thinking, like, what is my signature outfit? Like if my friends asked, and I think they would say it's a white dress. Like you can't go wrong with a flowy white dress or like any, it just, it works. You can accessorize it. And I have a lot of white dresses I probably need, and a lot of like blue striped button downs. But I'm like, I can't, when I see something light blue in the store, I'm always like, oh yes, I have to have this. Like, okay, enough. I can't just like buy every white dress and light blue skirt. It's like insane. But I mean, I love the row. I love the row.
I wouldn't strike you as a row girl because you know your style is quite whimsical and romantic, and they're quite. It's much more sort of pared back.
We're minimalist, totally. I think that I like playing with that. I think off duty, I'm probably a little bit more minimal than I am on the red carpet.
When you were growing up, who were the people you looked up to as far as style?
Alexa Chung was my number one, and I went to the Met Ball with her and Taekwon 1 year. And I heard that she was like the other guest and freaking out. And the very, very first Met Ball I ever went to, I met her in passing. And she complimented my outfit. And I just like freaked out. Like now since I know her, but she was someone like I had posters of her like on my wall and things like that.
That's so cute.
I just think I liked her, you know, the twist, like she like had that the tomboy and the cutesy girl. I mean, I guess kind of quite 60s that really works for her, but that was like what I was always going for when I was younger. Now I think I have my own thing, but I definitely looked up to her. Like Sylvie Vartan, like I had a lot of like posters of her.
Wow.
I don't even know who that is.
The name is familiar.
Sylvie Vartan. She's like a 60s French singer. Bardo vibe, I guess. But it was it was very 60s growing up.
Yeah, very Bardo vibes. Okay.
Yeah. I mean, Grace Kelly, I want to play her movie. I'm like, that's my goal one day.
Is that your dream role?
Yeah. It would be just because I want to kind of wear that Cartier ring. I don't know. But she for sure is someone that I still think about on the like for the red carpet, because I think you want to look timeless, and there is something like a nod to that glamour of yesteryear. Like you can't go wrong, because there's nothing worse than dating yourself, I think, if you're on a carpet or on, you know, like I think about that a lot with like wedding day, which is so far off, but I'm like, you have to look, has to be timeless.
Can you tell us about what projects you have coming up?
Yes, there's a couple things that aren't announced yet that are really exciting, but there is one that's announced. It's with Chris Abbott, and Jessica Chastain is producing this
one. Oh, cool.
Yeah, it's called Maid of Orleans. We have to figure out when we're going to make it, but it's kind of about the power dynamics on a set between the director and his assistant.
Oh, cool. Interesting.
Yeah.
So see, you're an assistant again, like the Devil Wears Prada.
Exactly. I'm typecast. It all comes back. This is the role I've been training for. Getting coffee, doing that, like, that's right. That's so funny.
Do you think, I mean, the great, last season really ended on a cliffhanger, so I'm very curious to see what's happening now. Do you miss it when the seasons end? Do you feel like you know Catherine really well?
I do. I feel it. Well, the first, when we shot the pilot, I was 20. Now I'm 25. So this show has been a part of my life for the most formative, you know, years of my life thus far. So she shaped me in a lot of ways. And I'm also an executive producer on the show.
So, how has that been different, approaching a project like that?
It was different at first because I had never really done it before, because I did come on board. They let me come on board right away, like before the show was even sold. Like, the show was actually a movie at the time and we all decided that it would be a show. So I saw it from the very start, which was such a learning experience. But also, I think I learned to really use my voice and stand up for myself, which is kind of like my character, because Catherine is thrown into these situations and she's quite young and you can doubt yourself. And I definitely went through the doubting phase, but I had to also realize, you know, tell myself, you know what, you've been acting since you were two and you have been on a lot of film sets and you do know what you're talking about. You know, like, don't, you know, don't let someone, just because you're a young woman, like, tell you that you don't know what you're talking about. So I've definitely learned that. I mean, not on this show, they're all really great, but just with other producing projects and being in rooms with people that you aren't normally in rooms with as an actor. So it's been really exciting. And now I feel quite comfortable in the position, I will say, through doing the show.
Did you do a lot of crazy research for Catherine, or did you want to just sort of be your own Catherine?
Yeah, I tried to do some research, but then Tony McNamara, who's our showrunner, writer, he wrote The Favorite, very tonally similar and things. But he, you know, I was like, okay, so I'm going to do all this research and everything. And he's like, you don't need to do that. Like, our show is, we pride ourselves on the fact that it's not historically accurate. But I did discover, you know, I did a few. She created the roller coaster, which we showed.
Oh, fun.
I don't know if you've seen Furniture ever. It is covered in vaginas and penises carved out of wood.
What?
Yes. She was a huge, well, that's where the horse rumor came from, is it was basically like the first form of slut shaming, because they said that she fucked a horse. And so,
right.
Because she had.
And do we think she did, or she just was a sexually liberated individual?
I think she was a sexually liberated individual. I think she had a lot of lovers and loved sex, and, you know, that also is a woman in charge. And so they had to belittle her in some ways. It was all, I guess it's kind of the let them eat cake situation.
Yeah. Another misunderstood monarch.
Right. Yeah. Aren't they all?
Elle, we're sort of a fashion and culture podcast, and we like to hear, what are you listening to, reading, watching lately? Like, what's your cultural diet at the moment?
I mean, I do. I watch Succession every Sunday.
Me too.
What am I listening to? Well, I mean,
still Katy Perry or not?
Yeah, I love Katy Perry. You know what I do watch, which is like no one watches, but I still do? American Idol.
Oh, wow.
Wow. Shocker. Now I'm really surprised.
Yep. So there you go. I watch also, like, the Stanley Tucci did the Searching for Italy while I'm watching Searching for Mexico with Eva Longoria.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Are you a big cook? What are you cooking these days?
I go through real moments with my cooking. Like, I will cook all the time and in bursts, and then I will just not cook at all and just be ordering food and, like, can't stop doing that. So right now I'm not in a cooking phase, but I did have, like, a lot of Italian cooking phase. Like, I was like making my pasta and just trying that out. I definitely am a savory. I'm not a baker as much. I did make some, like, choux pastry, like, eclairs that were good, that worked.
That's impressive.
Complicated.
but I can follow directions pretty well. I'm an actor, so I have to, I guess, follow directions. But I would love to go off somewhere and take cooking classes. That would be really fun. I'll do that one day.
Al, tell us about your skin, because I feel like I was listening to an interview you did with Conan O'Brien, and you guys were talking about how being really pale means that you can't really be outside in the heat doing sports, and also that you just have to be sunscreened up all the time.
Gosh, I know, that was my life, like the smell of that. My mom, like, and she's like, you know, like when the moms are just like rubbing their kids down, like your just body's moving. It's like, oh, that feeling. And that was me. I'm like, oh, totally. But I mean, I will thank her later for sure about that. I mean, I'm playing tennis now, so I am actually daring to go out and play, but I just have to put sunscreen on. I always wear like a little visor. I go through like hard times with my skin and then great times. And it's just, hormones are crazy. I mean, we all know that, but it just, and I'm just so sensitive and traveling, that doesn't help. But then sometimes it does, like, you're like, ooh, this water's really good. Like LA water, I live in the Valley and it's so bad.
London's not great for, I hate London water for my hair. Oof, it's so hard.
Better than LA, but I think, it's, I guess it's not, New York is the best.
Yeah, I agree.
This is like absurd, but they, you know, they bring in New York water for to make bagels.
Yeah, it's true.
They do. You know, like,
yes, that's the whole thing.
Mm-hmm. Can't get a good bagel in London.
No, because of the water.
I don't even know what that is. Like, you know, like also like breakfast sandwiches. It's like,
yeah, they don't. We don't do that. We don't do that. Uh-uh.
Don't do
breakfast
that. Yes.
Sandwiches.
Listen to the disdain in Choma's voice. We don't do that.
I'm not a sandwich fan.
You're not a sandwich fan.
Mm-mm.
Period or just for in the morning?
Period. I just don't. No. Uh-uh.
That's where we differ. I'm like a huge, that's the one thing we differ. I am a huge sandwich fan. Almost so much that I think my last meal might be a deli.
Stop. No.
Wow.
No, I like... I literally had a Subway sandwich a minute ago.
God bless. I really appreciate that.
Boy. Have you ever had Jersey Mike's?
What? Yes. No. Jersey Mike's was a thing for me in college.
What is that?
That's not for you, Choma. Okay. It's too pedestrian.
Not for you. It is not for you.
I just like hot food. I'll take a warm sandwich or like a press sandwich, but not
Al,
cold.
What's your Subway order?
Okay. I make my own. I get 6-inch on wheat with turkey, American cheese, a lot of lettuce. I love that crunchy.
I love the crunch.
I do banana peppers, a lot of mayo and yellow mustard. And that's it.
Okay. Before we're going to let you go, but I was chuckling that apparently when you were 13 on Conan, you told him your favorite food was a Cobb salad and it like made news for weeks.
Really? Why? Why would that make?
Why? People were interested.
I know. I mean, how dumb. I know.
Well, Cobb salad is like a sandwich, but without sandwich. So that makes sense.
Same thing. Yeah, exactly.
Elle, thank you so much. We're so excited to watch season 3. Have a fab time in Cannes.
Thank you, guys. I hope, we really covered it all.
That's it for this episode of The Run Through. The Run Through of Vogue is a production of Condé Nast Entertainment.
The show is produced by Susie Lechtenberg, Chelsea Daniel, and Alex John Burns. It's engineered by Jake Loomis, Gabe Quiroga, and Kevin Barassa, and mixed by Mike Kutchman. See you next week.